Three generations, three backgrounds, three different chapters in the story of a musical and cultural tradition that spans centuries and continents. I'm Aaron Henkin, and this hour on The Signal, we'll learn about the roots and new directions of the West African griot tradition. During the course of the program, we're going to meet Sheikh Hamala Diabaté, a Malian griot who's brought his musical mastery and 800 years of heritage overseas to the U.S.
We respect this music. It's very, very important for us.
Also this hour, we'll meet Baba Baile McKnight, born and raised in North Carolina. He embraced the principles of the Black Power movement. He became a student of African dance and drumming. And in the 1970s, he journeyed to Africa in search of his roots.
The goal is towards the revival of a positive self-image.
This hour, we'll also meet a young griot of Senegalese ancestry who was born and raised in the Washington, D.C. area. Amadou Kouyaté carries on the torch of his griot bloodline, a well-traveled musician equally at home in Africa and in the U.S.
In terms of the spirit of who we are, we are one and the same.
Welcome again to The Signal, our weekly tour through the hidden corners of Maryland's cultural landscape. Hidden corners this week that open out onto an expansive cultural heritage with centuries-old roots in West Africa. I'm Aaron Henkin, and joining me this hour as we explore the past and present of the Malian griot tradition is folklorist Cliff Murphy of Maryland Traditions and the Maryland State Arts Council. Cliff, welcome.
Thanks, Aaron. It's great to be here.
Cliff, as the hour progresses, we're going to meet the esteemed Malian griot Sheikh Hamala Diabaté, as well as drum builder and student of African heritage Baba Baile. But first, we're going to get acquainted with a young American-born griot by the name of Amadou Kouyaté. Tell us a little bit about his father, his family line, and his interesting sort of cross-cultural position.
Amadou is a young guy, a musician who lives up by Mondawmin Mall in Baltimore. Was born and raised in Washington, D.C. His parents started a group called Memory of African Culture. His father was a man named Jimu Kouyaté, who was from a long line of griots from Senegal before coming here to the United States. So Amadou says that he's the 150th generation of griots from this family lineage. And Amadou's somebody who identifies very strongly with both his African heritage and his African-American heritage.
Amadou Kouyaté, a very accomplished kora player. We're going to learn a little bit more about that instrument straight away now. He plays this instrument both in traditional and in these original contemporary contexts. We're going to hear something of the contemporary vein a little later in the program, but first now we're going to enjoy a traditional instrumental song that means a lot to him and his family, and I think is really a beautiful example of what the sound of the kora is all about.
The song I'll start with today is Namfule. I'm going to start with it, one, because my mother likes the song a lot. It was a song that my father played. My father is Jimu Kouyaté, and he was a very knowledgeable and just well-known griot and jelly. He's very special to me, just as my mother is. So I love my family. I'm going to just give them a shout-out through this song. Thank you.
Music from Amadou Kouyaté here on The Signal. This hour on the program, we're learning a bit about the griot or jelly tradition as it's existed for hundreds of years in West Africa and as it continues to flourish here in the Maryland, D.C. region. Later this hour, we're going to be hearing other instruments from the griot, the ngoni and the drums, the balifone. And as you're about to hear Amadou Kouyaté explain, the song we just heard is played on the kora.
And kora is a West African harp from the Manding people. It's played by the jelly, which are historians inside of the Manding culture. And it belongs to an orchestra or an ensemble of instruments that are played by jelly or historians. The kora has 21 strings. It's 10 on the right, 11 on the left. And it's made from a gourd. A calabash, in fact. And what happens is they take the calabash, they cut it in half, and when they put it in the sun, and it doesn't rot, it becomes hard, it dries out like that, and they cover the calabash with cow skin. It's basic. This is like Kora 101 when you're a kid, and they give you the instrument, and then you go to the next level. That's the way it works.
Kora 101, says Amadou Kouyaté, a tutorial on the traditional West African harp here on The Signal. I'm Aaron Henkin here this hour with folklorist Cliff Murphy, whose organization Maryland Traditions has been chronicling this vibrant African music and cultural scene here in the region. And Cliff, first of all, I suppose we maybe ought to explain the snoring sound that listeners might have heard on that last recording.
That was Amadou's son, his name Sire, and he's 1 year old, and he was taking a nap in the corner of the
sleeping
studio.
Sleeping quite deeply.
Yes, I wish that I could do that.
It's kind of an interesting point to make, though, that he traveled with his crew. He had his little daughter with him, too, in the control room with me. His son was sleeping on the chair right next to him, and, you know, he goes, he plays this elaborate music, and it's just like, another day for the kids. Part of their natural daily life.
Sure, both for the kids and for, I think that Amadou very much grew up this way. I mean, he told us stories about how when he was a kid and his mother and father when their group would have their performances, that Amadou would sleep on the speaker stands. And, you know, it's funny because it really, that dynamic with his son here in the studio echoed both Amadou's experiences as a little kid, and also we'll hear Sheikh Kamala Jabate talk about how his dad brought him everywhere with him when he was little, and that's how he learned to do what he did, just by watching and absorbing.
So, Cliff, you mention Sheikh Kamala Jabate, the griot who we're going to meet in the next segment of our program. You know, he's come here to the U.S., and he has had an opportunity to travel with his music to see much more of this country than probably you or I have seen. And similarly, Amadou Kouyaté, this younger griot that we're hearing from now, has had an opportunity to travel extensively through Africa as well as a musician. And during our recordings, Amadou Kouyaté made some really interesting observations about what it's like for him to travel around back in Africa.
I will say that when you get to Africa, you know, and I've lived in Mali for a while, I've lived in Senegal for a while, I've lived in Gambia for a while, I've been to Guinea. Like, I traveled around West Africa quite a bit. And one thing I will say is that there's just a polarity in that part of the world that just is remarkable. It's like when you get off and you put your feet on the ground, like you feel like you're, you know, enhanced in a certain kind of way. Like in, you know, a lot of times where people generally talk about the notion of being home and and there being this powerful connection to the place. Like, in a lot of ways, there's truth to that. You know, there's something about that space that me personally, as well as my experience of going with different African Americans, just people from all over the world. Like, it seems like when you get there and you're surrounded by this very, very just honest human emotional output thing. It's like when people are incredibly happy, they're incredibly happy, and when they're incredibly upset, they're incredibly upset, and when they're incredibly, you know, hurt, they're incredibly hurt. It's something just very genuine, just in terms of how people interact, and like that's something that if you're an artist, like that's ammunition for days. Like you just, you know, you're in a cornucopia, you know. So you just have to be open. Keep your heart open. That's what I can say.
The words of Amadou Kouyaté, who manages to carry on the tradition of his ancestors as the American-born son of a deeply rooted West African griot, or jelly, bloodline.
What may be unique in terms of my experience of holding on and maintaining this tradition is that I have a foundational responsibility in terms of how it's been done that comes from my father's side and comes from the experience of growing up and observing it both in Africa and in the States. The one thing that I have embraced as a part of that responsibility is being able to acknowledge my community and my culture and my experience here. And because if my responsibility is one in which I have to articulate the experience, like my experience is coming from a world that I've developed here as well. And I honestly, if you stop me in the street and you ask me, you embrace me, and you say, where are you from? What is it you do? Like, there's a lot that I'm going to be able to identify with the experience here, not only because I was born here, but there's been a very prolific and consistent community of people that preserve African culture here in the States, even to the extent where arguably there is much more of a effort to maintain the connection, acknowledging that it's not being taken for granted in a sense, because when something is removed, then you understand how valuable it is in the physical sense, but spiritually it's consistent. And then like back home, it's so ingrained into your everyday way of life. It's like you don't make a separation from it. Like, you know, yes, there's this jolly culture. Yes, we serve a role and responsibility in that community, but it's so ingrained, like, unless you operate devoid of your sense of community, you're not going to separate it. So that much, I'll say, is a very interesting journey for me, because it requires a lot of, you know, introspective thought, critical analysis in terms of what it is and how I'm going to maintain that. And even more so, like, I'm a human being. Like, I have my own developmental things that I'll go through on a day-to-day. So it's like, yes, like you go through that, and then now you have the responsibility of learning to articulate it and being able to make the connections to people with it.
Reflections of Amadou Kouyaté, American-born son of West African griot ancestry, here on The Signal. Our program this hour, a look at the African musical and cultural community here in the Maryland, D.C. region. When our program continues, we'll meet an African-American man whose early confrontations with racism in this country led him to journey through the African continent in search of his heritage. And we're also going to make the acquaintance of renowned Malian griot, who's made a second home for himself in Maryland. Amadou Kouyaté now takes us into a break with a traditional song he calls Mali Sage.
It's a very interesting story behind it, just in terms of there was a village where you had a guardian of the village that it manifested as a hippopotamus, and there was a young lady that she spent a lot of time down by the river and around this hippopotamus, and people thought it was peculiar, and eventually, in a nutshell, I can't tell the whole thing right now, is they go and they kill it, not knowing that this hippopotamus was really just a manifestation of a guardian for that village. And, you know, and there was, you know, repercussions that came from that. And it, I guess one of the morals in it is, that, like, sometimes you don't understand every relationship, but it's important to respect, you know, that there's a balance for things in this world. Like, and, you know, sometimes that balance is beyond our own judgment, you know.
Iye malisa jo bafula be malisa e malisa jo bavula be malisa. Jeba kanike, jeni jeba kanike, orela la kanina. Muzuba kanike, muzuni muzuni la kanike, orela la kanina. Jeba kanike, jeni muzuli la kanike. Gorote la kanina, ani gorote kanimina, bimoye korosila kanina, ani gorote kanimina, bimoye korosila kanina, kana kasina, ninkeze nimbe kana kasina, kana kasina, kamfala ninja kana kasina. Moye wala, moye veva, moye si, moye ve. Iye malisa, mavula be malisa jo. Iye malisa jo, mavula be malisa.
You're listening to The Signal, an original production of Your Public Radio in Baltimore. Our episode this week, a special co-production with folklorist Cliff Murphy of Maryland Traditions and the Maryland State Arts Council. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Signal. I'm Aaron Henkin here with folklorist Cliff Murphy of Maryland Traditions and the Maryland State Arts Council. And Cliff, as we head back into this program about the West African musical and cultural community here in the Maryland, D.C. region, if there's a spiritual figurehead to be found in the scene, I think it's got to be the venerable Sheikh Hamala Diabaté. You were kind enough to introduce me to him recently, and before we hear that recording of that conversation, let me ask you to say a few words about this man's background and just his reputation here in the United States.
Sure. Sheikh is from a very well-known musical family in Mali, and when he came here to the United States, he came as a musician. And while he was here, a number of different American musicians began to really strike up relationships with him with an interest in African music and also African-American music and really American musical heritage. So one of the ways that Sheikh has kind of risen to prominence in the United States is working with a lot of banjo players to explore the African roots of that instrument. The ngoni, which is the instrument that is his main instrument, is really one of the ancestors of the banjo. And so Sheikh is someone who's played with Taj Mahal and with Bela Fleck and Tony Trischka and kind of this whole army of well-known banjo musicians.
Thank you very much. My name is Sheikh Hamala Diabaté. I'm from Mali, West Africa, and I'm griot. But the griot, that's the French word. Our people call us jelly. Jelly. Je is a union in Mandingo. When you say union in Mandingo, you say je. And the li is a honey. So we grew up, we born griot, and we learn from our family, father, grandfather, and, you know, like that.
Jelly is the term for it. To explain what the role is, what you do learn from your family and the generations that come before you, what the art of being a jelly is all about.
Everything we do over there, everybody takes something from the jelly. If you want to learn some more about yourself, your ancestor, you come to the jelly. It's a lot of places when I go, people say, sure, can I come jelly? I say, people, you don't come jelly. We born jelly. You know, we learned since I was a baby, we born is a many instrument home. Kora, goni, bala. I play all, but I'm goni player. Mm-hmm.
Tell me if I understand correctly. So it's like a family lineage of people who, in a sense, are born with a special role in life, a special job to do for other people, and a kind of a special power to do that. And that power is to help people understand things about themselves, about their past, and maybe about what they're meant to be doing. Does that sound right?
Yeah. He's a one rider in Mali. His name is Amadou Ampateba. He's a rider. He was saying, one griot die is like one library burn, destroy. Because before in Africa, we don't have a paper, we don't have a pen to write the history. But this all history they get from the griot. All this music we play is not just to play the music like that to go to dance. The background is very, very important. The griot music give you the education. This music, when we play, give people which way you gotta go to your life. The jelly very, very important for our society. For example, when somebody marry in Mali, even Africa, let's say, you don't go to find your wife like that. You come to the griot. You go to the griot, you say, okay, I see this woman, I want to marry her. And the griot go to the woman family, talk to the father, the mother, to find your wife for you.
It sounds like the jelly offers a lot of spiritual counseling.
For me, I'm happy. But actually, I am here today in America, but I don't change my culture. I really want to be what I am, and I do the same way. People need us every day. I do like I'm in Mali. Here, if people don't feel understand each other, they just call me, I come and talk. They say, okay, Sheikh, I do because you come here. It's finished for me. Now I feel good with my husband.
Let me ask you, Sheikh, to tell the story about when and why you left Mali to come here to the U.S.
Okay, I'm here since 1995. But my dream before was to speak English. I know who read now. My English is now good because I don't get chance to go to school. Since I came, I just go like 6 months maybe. But when I came here, actually, it's hard, very hard. But when you're born man, you gotta have a heart anywhere you go. So tie your belt, like walk hard, and don't be start something today and you wanna interest today, no good. Just take time, and people know you. But I came here, I was very, very happy to share my culture with American people. The people I meet, very, very nice. Seka Mala in America today, I play all in America. Even next week, I'm in New Orleans Jazz Fest. My band travel, we have a lot of festival. And this culture, when I come, my music, I do with people here. For me, it's not only me to teach them. I teach them, but I learn something from them too.
From WYPR in Baltimore, this is The Signal. I'm Aaron Henkin here this hour with Maryland Traditions folklorist Cliff Murphy as we explore the flourishing West African cultural community in the Maryland, D.C. region. And Cliff, we just heard from Malian griot or jelly Sheikh Hamala Diabate, who immigrated to the U.S. After years practicing his ancestral role in his homeland. We've also met a young American-born griot, Amadou Kouyaté, who's griot bloodline ties him to this centuries-old tradition and who's carrying on the torch here as a child of two worlds, in a sense. And now we're going to turn to a man who introduces himself as Baba Baile. Tell us who he is and how he fits into this larger cultural picture here.
Sure. Baba Bile McKnight is really one of the foundational figures in the African music scene in D.C. and Baltimore, which really stands out in the United States as having a particularly strong and vibrant African music community. He as a young man, started to get involved in music and instrument making as a means of exploring his African heritage. He takes on apprentices to teach people how to make instruments, how to play the drums, how to engage in a lot of different ways with their African heritage.
My parents named me Gregory McKnight. I was given the title Baile, which is a contraction of two words, Baba Ile. Ile is the name for a house, and when you have the man of a house who's responsible for all the families and all the people, that's the Baba Ile or Baile. Then when you have several compounds come together, then you have the Baile, or we would call that person like the neighborhood chief.
Tell me about your own background, your childhood, and your broadening horizons as concerns Africa.
When I was coming along as a young boy of African descent, being what we later began to call as black was not popular, even amongst black people. This was a result of a mental conditioning, and all that was really about politics. Some African people remained and only married within the African race, and some people merged some with other races. Some of this was, like today, from romance and love. A lot of it was from violation. So for me and my family, my people are from North Carolina, both sides of my family. And on one side, they remained to marry within the African blood as best they were able to. On the other side, it was a mixture of people. When we were coming along, the members of the family who were darker complexion and relationship people who were lighter complexion was an issue every day. Who qualified to get the job? I noticed this behavior. Racism was very rampant. Our own state-sponsored terrorism. When I was a young boy, would go and visit the grandparents and be in the South, there were certain things that we just couldn't do, certain behavior you had to have. And this was rather appalling to me. When we looked at television, we didn't see good representation of ourselves, good enough to be a slave or to be the first person to die in the different plots of the dramas and all. When it got to history book, when I was in high school, out of a 330-something book of history, it was 6 pages about the Negro, you know, who later became Afro and African-American. So what I'm relating to you is how the environment begins to have an effect and shape the mind from youth.
Let me interrupt here and ask you to just kind of place your experience at the point it was in civil rights history and the sort of awareness, like the point in your life when you took it upon yourself to learn about your African roots. And I mean, obviously, no one was going to hand that heritage to you because of the way the world was when you're growing up, but you sought it out, you found it, and you decided to pursue it.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a movement afoot, which was called the Black Power Movement. What is it? It is about positive self-image. When I was in high school, something from deep within inside myself, or we say my spirit, just took over, and I disrupted the history class because I couldn't stand that there was nothing really positive being said beyond the fact that Crispick Attucks was the first person killed for the Boston Tea Party or whatever. It was always the African man being the sacrifice for whatever improvement was coming about here in America. So as the Black Power movement was underway, we had many different facets, many speakers. We had people like Malcolm X. We had people like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, people who were formulating groups and people who were speaking out. And from previous decades, we had people like Paul Robeson. So that's where the influence are. When you gain access to new information, you are then able to begin to change your thinking. And that influence, how you think influences your behavior.
Tell me about your first experience traveling to Africa, what the impetus was, when it was, where you went, and what it was like when you got there.
What led up to Africa? As a teenager, I did my apprenticeship with Sam Gilliam, who is an internationally renowned black artist. From there, that led me to Howard University. And from there, I was learning to weld. I made some bells, my idea of African bells. That took me to African Dance Studio. That's where I got exposed to a company situation of African drumming and dance. There were national dance ballets who come from Senegal, who come from Guinea, from Mali, from Nigeria, and also from East Africa. So those of us who were now engaged in the African drumming and so forth, we were anxious to meet people. And people would invite you, come to Africa, you know, come home. This was 1972. So I traveled to go and experience the traditional folklore, which we were attempting to enact through the theater company.
Let me interrupt you there just a second to kind of zoom in a little bit on this moment then, when you had dedicated a certain amount of your time and energy to interpreting these traditions and arts as best you could. You've got certain expectations, I suspect, on the verge of this trip, right?
Absolutely.
And then you get there. Tell me about what it was like when you got there and how the reality of making it back there kind of matched up or maybe not with what you assumed the experience was going to be like.
When I traveled, I wanted to have the real, genuine experience. So I was with a traditional chief. They had a house in the city, and then there was the village. So when I got there, I was surprised to see how much a Western influence existed, which later people explained that, you know, this came about as a result of colonization. But life there in the city was one way. And then when we'd walk the 5 miles to the village, it was a whole nother life. Because the traditional life in the village was almost identical to my life on the farm in North Carolina with my people. And so what I began to be aware of was the cultural retentions. So I come to realize that Africa had not been programmed out of the minds of the Africans who were subjected to the slave condition. And now it's just real simple. Wherever people go, they take what they know with them. That's the culture. Nobody don't just decides, okay, I'm going to travel somewhere. I'll make sure I'm taking my culture with me. Culture is what you do.
Baba Baile McKnight at his drum shop Baile's African Drum Works in Forestville, Maryland. You're listening to The Signal from WYPR in Baltimore. Our program this week, a look at the multifaceted microcosm of West African music and culture in the Maryland, D.C. region. The Signal continues after the break. Stay with us.
Welcome back to The Signal. I'm Aaron Henkin here in studio this week with Maryland Traditions folklorist Cliff Murphy, as we've been learning about the multi-generational dimensions of the local West African musical and cultural community here in the Maryland, D.C. area. This hour so far, we've met Baba Baile, a North Carolina-born man who, growing up, took his cues from the Black Power movement and made it his mission to travel to Africa to connect with his roots. Baba Baile now runs an African drum shop in Forestville, Maryland. It's called Baile's African Drumworks. We've also met renowned Malian Ngoni player and traditional griot Sheikh Hamala Diabate, who brought his worldview and his historical heritage here to the U.S. in the 1990s. And we've met a young American-born griot, Amadou Kouyaté, who's effectively a child of two worlds, the son of a traditional West African griot, but he's also grown up nearby in the D.C. area, and in fact, he lives here now in Baltimore. And Cliff Murphy, these are interesting characters, each one of these three guys in their own right, but really especially interesting when you start looking at their relationship with each other.
Yeah, Amadou is Sheikh's nephew, and Amadou's father, Jimu, was good friends with Baile McKnight, and so Baile used to babysit Amadou. You know, in effect, you have a young man who's been raised by a community, who's been raised not only by his parents, but his parents' friends and musical colleagues.
So he's got like a room full of dads around him, in a sense, all the time. There's an interesting moment here from some of our interviews that we recorded that I want to share with folks that pertains to the traditional Malian djeli or griot's role as sort of a moral policeman or a spiritual policeman in traditional culture and other people's healthy respect for that particular position. We're going to hear Sheikh Hamala Diabate first here.
People trust the djeli in Mali a lot. When the djeli come to this way, you're not good. You know, I'm serious. You go to this way. You don't want the djeli see you. When he see you, he say, "Oh my God, I can't believe it that just the griot, you know, the griot coming to this way. I gotta go to this way. If you're not good, if you're good, you come and say, oh, how you feel? How's your daddy? How's your mom? How's your brother? How's all your family?" He say, "Good, blah 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 blah." And what you doing? And blah 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 blah. You know, just a couple of seconds, the griot pass. If you're not good, it's not good for you because you go to tell. I see my friend's son today. Oh, this, he don't want to be like his daddy. He's changing. It's not good. I got to go to talk to him. And they call the man to come to say, okay, you got to be careful because your father was like that. Do this. I do same way, even here with my nephew Amadou. So sometimes when I see him, his daddy all the time will Amadou come to me. Because I'm griot, his dad is from Mali, originally. But I like this traditional, and I keep going to this way. And I don't want to let the young people, the griot, they have a big responsibility. And the griot got to be very careful to his life.
There are times where, because I know that they're going to give me truth and sincerity, whether I'm prepared to receive it at that moment or not is going to determine whether I cross the street or not. And that's very honest. Like, you know, sometimes I find myself wanting to get it together before I'm in either of these Baba's company. And if I know it's not together, then I'll be a little bit more scarce than usual. But the reality is I know that my relationship with these Baba's, as well as other people in my community, is an integral part of my maintaining this tradition, because it's not arbitrary and it's not going to happen spontaneously. Like, you have to be consistent.
Amadou Kouyaté speaking with a healthy dose of deference about his elders. Cliff Murphy, these are mentor-apprentice relationships, musically and personally too, with all the built-in intergenerational tensions of any parent-child bond.
You know, going and visiting with these guys is whether it's you and I, or whether it's Amadou going to visit Baba Baile or Sheikh, you're getting schooled. And especially with Baile, I think that he's somebody who pointed out that this radio program is just a big construction on our part, that we recorded the interviews and that we're going to piece it together the way we want to tell the story. And he's right, you know. These guys are critical of institutions in a way that I think is healthy. They provide an important perspective that all of us should be mindful of.
Critical also about the continuity of the culture within generations of griots and jeles. Interesting to hear now Amadou Kouyaté talking about traditionalists and the creative spirit, and the fact that he actually, he's very masterful on his instrument, the kora, but that he uses it, in fact, to create some very contemporary music, which we're going to hear shortly as well.
There's always this dichotomy between the traditionalist and the creative spirit. Like, you want to adhere to certain things, but the fact of the matter is all traditions are created. So there had to be somebody willing to, you know, take something in a new direction. And that often comes under scrutiny, and it often, and sometimes it's embraced. I know personally with my dad, like, he was the type of person that as much of a traditionalist as he was and is in spirit, you know, he was very encouraging of the creative process. And Sheikh Amalai, like, sometimes me and my uncle, we have differences of opinions as far as the directions to go, but, like, I respect his wisdom, and he respects my, you know, my creativity in a sense. But, you know, I'm the type of person to thy own self be true. If you think it, you know, express it.
I murk you, I don't mean it as a euphemism. Being negated to the past tense of living. You have desecrated all these blessings you've been given. Blessed to be a part of such a vision. Sucker, I murk you, and you must be ready to die. Sucker, I murk you, ain't no need of telling you why. There's no need to fight, man, I'm telling you, yeah, man. And you must be ready to die. Sucker, I murk you, ain't no need of telling you why. Once again, I done found myself in his opposition. Mr. Mention is still defending his opposition. And the death of me is unwilling to live by my conviction. Truth of the verb, that abuse of the word is not the mission. Would you sell your soul for profit? And this is not the mission. Well, a block is written of fools that are eager not to listen. Well, I'm boxing and kicking the kitten, caboodles of cocks and chickens. Fending off vultures, cause this culture is patent pending. I speak in tongues in cemeteries till your dead is risen. Dread musician practicing alchemy until your head is missing. A dread condition, I walk the earth with no clothes, but naked just to say is missing. Your time is ticking. Stew is brewing, your pot is mission. Too hot for the kitchen, and still without a pot to piston. Cockamamie roster baby with proper diction. The cockamamie roster baby with proper diction. It's got to murk you, and I don't mean it as a euphemism. Being negated to the past tense of living. You have desecrated all these blessings you've been given. Blessed to be a part of such a vision. Sucker, I murk you, and you must be ready to die. Murk you, and you need a telling you why. There's no need to fight, man, I'm telling you, yeah, man. And you must be ready to die. Sucker, I murk you, ain't no need in telling you why.
Amadou Kouyaté singing an original composition put to the melody of his traditional West African harp, the kora. New musical directions from a griot born here across the ocean from his father's home country of Mali. This hour on the program, we've heard from multiple generations within the West African cultural community here in the Maryland, D.C. region. And folklorist Cliff Murphy, I'm left here at the end of the program thinking about, you know, the power of memory, the power of music as a vehicle for history, and just that inherent urge that we all seem to have to keep traditions alive and to nourish those traditions and keep them relevant to our lives.
Yeah, I mean, there's the, you know, when Amadou was talking about that tension between the innovator and the conservative traditionalist, it's something that happens across generations, and things swing back and forth. And I think what we see here and what we'll hear in this last performance that we'll listen to that we recorded at Baile's African Drumworks is that even though there are these different perspectives, that when the community comes together, that there is this beautiful middle ground that people find and make remarkable music together. Elefa bala tambo be vale solubidana imaye solubidana elefa bala solubidana minalo banta imaye minalo banta elefa bala minalo banta oy mole la kotera la kunu de meno anye biro sini na mulo uyate la mo mandi mani mo tsara ma bariga madu Cameroon mo mandi mani mo sara ma bariga jusa mwa Ameriki mo mandi mani mo sara ma bariga baile Mali mo mandi mani mo sara ma bariga siga mala Koy mo li la ko dara la ko ndeme no anye bi ro sini ala bulo Kelle manine Klifu merfu kelle manine Kelle manine Erini kelle manine Kelle manine San kelle manine Le maine, Mali que le maine, ah que le maine, Ali Mayaro que le maine.
You've been listening to The Signal, an original production of WYPR in Baltimore. This week's episode has been produced in collaboration with Cliff Murphy of Maryland Traditions and the Maryland State Arts Council. Thanks go out to Hannah Rogers for her transcription services and to photographer Shane Carpenter, who took some beautiful portraits of our featured guests. You can see those online at The Signal's Facebook page, Signal Radio Baltimore. Up there on Facebook. That's also, I should say, where you can find links to more information about all the guests on this hour's program. For 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station, I'm Aaron Henkin. Thanks for listening.